C2PR. Number 20B.
So, on the other side, she says, I can also interpret that biblical verse, the prayer of faith shall save the sick, by seeing that faith means more than blind faith. The Bible usually used faith in a much higher sense, in a sense of a trust in a God that we have understood. That's usually their meaning of it. If one reads the Bible, especially the epistles, especially Paul, he meant with faith, because his great theory was faith, that through faith we are saved. But under faith, he didn't mean blind faith. He meant that we are absolutely convinced of God, which can be understood because he was the one that went to Athens and said, ye worship the unknown God, but I come and declare it unto you. So he knew that he understood the nature of God, and therefore when he was preaching faith, it was that faith in an understood God, the trust in an understood God. So, here in the text, that blind faith is compared with that faith which is scientific, namely, it is science, it is truth, it is the human understanding of the divine healing principle which Jesus used in his healing. Do you have that separation of blind faith and understanding? But the interesting thing is that when she comes really to explain that human understanding of the divine principle as Jesus' prayer, then she explains again what that prayer is, that human understanding. Namely, she said, they are humble prayers which were deep and conscientious protests of truth. Can you hear again? She always goes back to the one, two, three. Says they are prayers. What kind of prayers? The prayers of spirit, namely deep and conscientious protest, deep and firm affirmations of truth, and they were of the nature of soul, they were humble. They left really the self out of it and let really God work the way God wanted to work and not the way we ask God to work according to our petitions. So I can see the moment she touches the question, what kind of prayer do you mean? What kind of prayer is necessary at this point? That she says, well, it's always the prayer of what has gone on before, of the one and the two and the three and the four. And they are protests of truth, of man's likeness to God. See, you get really the depth of devotion, the depth of prayer. They are a deep and conscious process of truth, of man's likeness to God, and of man's unity with truth and love. Can you see principle? What were Jesus' prayers? She depicts them and says, well, Jesus' prayer is what I've told you in the chapter on prayer. They are the prayer of mind, the prayer of spirit, the prayer of soul, and the prayer of spirit, of unity with God. If you go that way, then your prayer is deep and conscientious. It's a prayer that has depth, that has substance. And that brings forth results. The true results. Those results that God wants to bring forth and not that which we just wished in our dreams. Yes? All right. So we epitomize wherein lies the devotion of a divine prayer, a spirit in a deep and conscientious protest of man's likeness to God. That's a prayer of faith and his unity with God. Now, we have made now with spirit that distinction and shown the substance of a true prayer. And now she goes on to soul. And this too is interesting. It always seems that the students in Christian Science in general, I mean, not you, forget what she depicts here on that whole page of life as spirit and life as soul, because they always somehow fall into the trap that when they read a book or read an article somewhere in the papers where it's talked about healing and spiritual healing, they say, oh, that's like Christian Science, because there were effects, they see the effects. But as we cannot reason from effect back to cause, we should be very careful and say, yes, we must admit finally that all kinds of belief have an effect. See, perhaps 100 years ago, mankind was not aware of that. Mankind did not know that their mental state has always an effect on them and the surroundings, always. But when psychology was known better in the world and took hold of the whole world, and I think today psychology has taken hold of practically everyone. Everyone knows what psychology is, what that funny term is. You know, 50 years ago, people did not know what that funny term is. But since then, that has trickled through to everyone, and everyone now knows that what he has in his mind is having an effect, that this is not just hot air. And I mean, I remember even in the 30s, that's how long? That's 50 years ago. That's not long. Well, you were hardly allowed to talk about psychology. That was still a very strange subject, you know, just from some who were way out, just phonies. I remember talking at that time, I was at the university with those students, you know, over the dinner table and lunch table with students of medicine and so on. Oh, they just laughed at it. It's all hot air. How can I be so ignorant? How can I be so ignorant about it? I remember a specific, they were very intelligent student in medicine. He was boarding next to me, so we were talking quite a bit, and I was very careful not to touch on it because I knew he would just jump on me the moment I would say, well, you know, your mental state has something to do with your health of the body or so. He would just jump. Afterwards, about 20 or 30 years ago, he opened up a clinic for psychosomatic medicine. With spiritual things, you are always nuts. You're always a screwy person. And you have to wait 30 years, and then you're no more a screwy person. You say a screwy, I made up that one. That is screw. So, Mrs. Eddy was writing here 100 years ago at a time when the people did not know in general that a belief has an effect on the body or on your surroundings, or on your business, or on your children, and so on. So she, for her to make clear that it has effect, and to make clear that you should not be sidetracked by looking at the effects, was quite a job. And so today we know that we have to be careful, that the world is coming into an era passing medicine. Medicine somehow is in a crisis. It's an interesting thing. They can heal better and better certain things. Think of all the infectious disease. That's no job anymore, huh? You heal that in a day or two with some tablets, or with many other diseases, no more a job. Think of all the wonderful surgery they do. And yet, interesting enough, the people as a whole believe less and less in medicine. They distrust medicine more and more, because somehow a new era is coming on, the psychological era, where they begin to see the universe is mental, that the mental is just as important, if not more important, than the material and the corporeal. And so we come into a new era where naturally this question here becomes very important for us, because the whole of mankind will say, well, whatever you ask in prayer, whatever your belief is, you get it. So each one can have his own belief and formulates his own belief and acts according and get their results. By their works you shall know them, by their fruits you shall know them, says the Bible. And we have to be careful that we don't know them by their fruits. You see? We should be very careful that these fruits are mostly fruits from beliefs. Other beliefs, higher beliefs, different beliefs, the phonier these beliefs are, the better they work. And we have to go right down to rock bottom understanding and say, only that which comes from the source of God, which is based, only that mentality, that thinking, that desire that is based on God, is that brings that effect which we really want. We don't want the other effects, because that alone will bring us further, uphill all the time. So here we have a wonderful description of what is the works of faith and what are the works of understanding, of Jesus' deep prayer of understanding, that were deep and conscientious protests in all humility. Oh yes, we are already going on to soul. I read there, prayer to a corporeal God. Now, we feel at once, now she changes the subject to soul, because corporeal God is the very opposite of the incorporeality of soul, that soul has no body, not a body. And so here, a prayer to a corporeal body affects the sick like a drug. Do we always remember that? That the belief to a corporeal body is synonymous, so to say, is of equal nature as a belief in a drug. So she reduces, so to say, the concept of a corporeal God to the concept of a material drug, a tablet, a pill. Quite something. Think of of that age in which Mrs. Eddy lived, where religion was so highly thought of. And dear God Almighty was a thing that you couldn't touch. And she brings that corporeal God in which people believed right down to a material drug, to a material pill. So this is the same. You can call it a drug or you can call it a corporeal God. It's just the same. They are synonymous. That was quite something. And yet you could see that belief in a corporeal God is just as ignorant as to believe in an ignorant God, which has no efficacy of its own. So the prayer to a corporeal God has no efficacy because we pray to God. It has only an efficacy, but borrows its power from human faith and belief. So here again she comes back and says, you know, human faith and human belief, they can heal. They can heal. And you see it. If you believe in a drug, it heals you. Anyway, in most cases, it actually does. We cannot say it doesn't. And she says, but that's the same as a human belief in a corporeal God. That's the very same thing. The drug does nothing because it has no intelligence. In other words, she says, a corporeal God does nothing because it has no intelligence. The corporeal concept of God has just as little intelligence as the drug has. Well, she really tells us, huh? It is a mortal belief. It is a mortal belief, not divine principle or love, which causes a drug to be apparently either poisonous or sanative. Sanative. So again, she reduces the effect when a healing takes place. She says, you have to be careful, because also a drug can heal, a belief in a corporeal God can heal, but those healings are not the healings of the divine principle love. But she also indicates something interesting, namely, she says, those beliefs, they can apparently bring forth something that is poisonous or sanitative, meaning that every prayer, except that prayer to a God truth, is always dualistic. It isn't just a healing prayer. It can also be a very poisonous prayer, a destructive prayer. The moment we are not falling back to a cause, that is God, we never know if the effect is positive or negative. It can be used for both. Whereas the divine principle love cannot be used for both. From there will never come an effect that is either poisonous or sanitative. It's always sanitative. It always heals. So it gives a real distinction now to say, you know, if we say, well, faith heals and science heals, then people could say, oh, well, then it doesn't really matter which one I take. The easier is belief. That I don't have to understand there, I don't have to study there, I don't have to work, I just take belief. If that heals too, okay, let's take that. That's much easier than science, which I have to understand. But the point is that belief has a dualistic effect, and factually then we can see that when we look to the end, as far as the end, we'll always see that it has always a negative effect, because it supports belief instead of understanding. And in the final analysis, belief is not the constituent of life. It does not bring us into the newness of life, never. Belief can heal here, belief can heal there, belief can heal us all through our life, just as the hypnotists do, or like the magnetists do, or the mesmerists do, and so on. Today, hypnotism is coming back in healing, and magnetism is coming back in healing, all this sort. Well, that will never give us newness of life. That's the drawback about it. They are actually, in the wider frame of reference, always negative. Yes. So we have here soul, insofar that it says, now what is identifying really your result? And it says, as the inner attitude determines the outward effect. That's the identity principle here, that what you have within you, that you have also as a phenomena outside, an expression of it. When we come to principle, this is a short one. Again, that question of the depths of prayer, the common custom of praying. It's a common custom. The moment it's a common custom, it has no more depth in it. It's a ritual, it's a repetition, it's just routine. The common custom of praying for the recovery of the sick finds help in blind belief. So again she goes and says, what is your prayer, your healing prayer? Does it stand on blind belief? But she says, in principle, it should come from enlightened understanding. So now she shows that instead of belief, we should have enlightened understanding. Changes in belief may go on indefinitely. And we see that. If we watch the world, then we can watch over the last 50 or 100 years how the world changed constantly their belief, what is healing. From medicine to psychology, from psychology to occultism, from occultism to hypnotism, from hypnotism to Eastern philosophy, from Eastern philosophy to drug taking and so on. And I don't know. We just see every year that something new is coming to the front, that the changes in belief are very, very rapid today. It took in earlier times, it took perhaps 500 years to change from ordinary old medicine, perhaps to Paracelsus, who began to see something more about the laws of medicine. From there it took another 500 years or so to come into the today's scientific medicine. Then from scientific medicine, your people drop away and go into all sorts of things, acupuncture, what do you have? You go to the Philippines and you get healed with the spiritual doctors there. And you know, the world is full of it. Huh? Just full of it. It changes in belief every year.
Huh? Can I ask you a question, Matt?
Yeah.
The evangelical Christians are having spectacular healing.
Yes.
Over the television, and I think they're true healings, and they are giving full credit to God, that is, to their understanding of God. And they are performing healings where Christian scientists are not.
Yes.
Why?
Yes. Because they have that ecstasy and emotion, huh, that is so deep-rooted, and they build it up in the community so much that you have a real deep emotional ecstatic belief in God. Sure, they say it's God, but they don't know what God is. Did you ask them what God is?
Yeah.
They don't know. So this healing come and go.
Yeah.
Didn't you have one, I think one of these evangelic healers was Kuhlmann?
Yeah.
You see, I remember about 10 years ago when I was in Boston, one of those people in Boston, a man said to me, well, here is Mrs. Kuhlmann and produces these wonderful healings right on the stage. And this is quite a concern to Christian Science, because we can't go on the stage and say, come on, there, come on, I'll heal you. And I said, well, we really should be able to do the same. What is she doing today? She's dead. What are her followers doing today? Nothing. It not even took 5 years to wipe that whole thing off the floor. You see, it has no signs in it. It has no substance in it. It's typical what she says here. It's a terrific belief in God. You can say prayer to a corporeal God. You can also say prayer to an unknown God. You can also say an emotional prayer to a God that is absolutely loving, and you don't know what love is. You can say all sorts of things what that God is, and believe in it, and it has its effect. But everything that rests on belief has no unfoldment. It cannot stand, really, the stress of the circumstance, the stress of time. It comes and goes. Well, how did it start with psychology? You had Mesmer. Well, people flocked to him. They flocked to him in Vienna, they flocked to him in Paris, they flocked to him wherever he was, by the hundreds. He usually healed about 200 people a day. Where is it? It comes and goes. Within a few years, that whole thing was just forgotten. Nobody talked anymore about Mesmer practically already in the year 800. He had a period of about 5 or 10 years, and that then it was over. That's something you have to consider. You see, that's what just this subject wants to show to us, that we can have an effect on every kind of belief, whatever the belief is. The more deep rooted that belief is, well, the more it has an effect. But that belief fades away after a time. And second, it cannot be taught. And that is always the great point about Christian Science. That's why Christian Science has not yet gone under completely. It still could stand the last 100 years, whereas all the others really just disappeared, so to say, from the surface. Because there is still something there that says Christian Science builds on understanding and therefore can be taught. It's slower than what the belief brings forth. You know that Mrs. Eddy makes that statement. She could see that in her time. In that article on faith cure, she says, I read it very speedily, she says, it is often asked why are faith cures sometimes more speedy than some of the cures wrote through Christian Scientists? Because faith is belief and not understanding, and it is easier to believe than to understand spiritual truth. It demands less cross-bearing, self-renunciation, and divine science to admit the claims of the corporeal senses and to appeal to God for relief through a humanized conception of his power than it is to deny these claims and learn the divine way. The divine way. Drinking Jesus' cup, being baptized with his baptism, gaining the end through persecution and purity. There is danger in this mental state called belief. He says it's a danger, what they do. For if truth is admitted, but not understood, it may be lost. And error may enter through the same channel of ignorant belief again. The faith cure has devout followers whose Christian practice, as you said, is far in advance of their theory. So I think that's the point, that we can say this is an interesting phenomena, that the practice can be higher than the theory. That the phenomena can be higher than the theory. But it doesn't last. It has no foundation. It has no basis. And we like to build on a sure foundation.